Today is Friday, April 3rd, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday! Yay! We made it. It was a very long week. It is currently 51 degrees and raining here in upstate New York. But yesterday, I don't know what the actual temperature was that we broke, but it was in the 60s. It was absolutely wonderful. The warmest day that we've had since November, the news said. So that was quite a treat. And by 2 o'clock this afternoon, we are going back into the deep freeze. I guess there's a front coming through, going to start raining. And by tonight, it'll be back down in the 20s again and snow through the weekend and at least Monday, I see. So not quite spring yet. It's trying real hard. As long as we don't get another foot or two, I think I'll be all right, though. A couple inches will melt by the next day. So where do we continue? Yesterday, we jumped on the dopamine bandwagon and took a look at some more issues that are created by dopamine. We looked at that new insecticide that they are working on that is going to be shutting off dopamine to mosquitoes. And it really, really got me as to how they said it'll kill the mosquitoes. So we started digging in deeper as to what dopamine does in the human body. Of course, they say it's going to be safe. We know how safe this shit is that they launch into the wild and then tell us about it 20 years later. So what I think I want to look at today, there actually were a couple stories that I've had on my Shit That Pisses Me Off page for quite a while that I have not gotten to yet. And this one was actually by Derek Burrows, and he comes on quite often on Nick's Antimedia show. So I'm sure you guys have heard Derek if you ever listened to that. And he is quite a prolific writer as well. I think he also was a guest once or twice on Brandon's Truth on the Tracks as well. Anyway, this caught my attention. Heavy mobile device use may affect social behavior of children. And, you know, we have pretty much established that from every way but Tuesday already in looking at how mobile device use interacts with the brain and the chemicals it creates. So it's not surprising that it affects the social behavior of children. So let's just check this out here for a second. Study published in the Journal of American Academy of Pediatrics suggests that heavy use of mobile devices such as smartphones or iPads may affect a child's ability to learn self-control. Now, if we understand what dopamine does in the brain, and that is the addictive dangling carrot chemical, then it makes a lot of sense that it affects the child's ability to learn self-control, right? Just like we were looking at yesterday with junk food and stuff of that nature, it's all the same mechanism that's interacting chemically on the brain. So hold on, let's read a little bit more of this. Researchers with the Boston University School of Medicine warn that the impact of mobile devices on young brains is not currently known. The scientists are concerned with the devices becoming a predominant method for pacifying children and the effect it will have on their ability to develop self-regulation. You know, I mean, if anyone's ever seen somebody sitting watching television or playing a video game and eating junk food, you can see exactly what they're talking about. It's very easy to overeat, let's say, because you're not paying attention and because that feel-good chemical reaction is going full tilt in the brain while you are preoccupied. You know, I was paying attention the last couple days. I've really been trying to limit. I can't stand listening to a TV playing constantly, and especially when you're in a smaller area and there's a lot of people, it's very difficult. And I like quiet because when I need to think, I need quiet. It's very difficult for me to think when it's not quiet and put complex ideas together. So over the last few days, I actually have been trying to isolate myself when I can to get a little bit of quiet. But yesterday, I let it all hang out. I threw on two of my sci-fi shows that I was 5 weeks behind on, and I found out it actually ended 3 weeks ago. So, but I did. I partook last night in some programming and watched two of my shows and drank a few beers along with it. And oh my God, I got to tell you, talk about dopamine release. It was such an enjoyable couple hours that I spent all by myself down here. And I mean, you could see absolutely, especially when you cut most of that out of your life, even for a small period of time, as to what the draw is when you get it back. It's like a good old friend. All right, anyway, let me go back to the story. Hold on. I don't know. I got bifocals on here. I broke my glasses, by the way. I'm going to have to get them, see if glasses guy can either bend them back into shape. A picture fell off the wall and landed right where the arm is and bent it majorly. So if I put it on my face, I mean, all it's going to take is just like moving sideways and they fall off. So I have to wear my bifocals right now. And it's a little bit hard sometimes to track things with bifocals, if you know what I mean. They're good for sitting stationary and reading, not for looking all over the place or trying to drive. All right. It says researchers at Boston Medical University Medical Center review the many types of interactive media available today and raise important questions regarding their use as educational tools, as well as their potential detrimental role in stunting the development of important tools for self-regulation. And, you know, I brought that up before, too, in regards to kids in school, how they are taking a lot of the education and they're putting it into little applications for the kids to learn, as opposed to the teacher teaching the class, right? They're doing like self-learning. I think that that's absolutely wrong. I mean, if you want to have like an application on the backside to reinforce what you've taught in the classroom, that's one thing, but giving the learning to the machine is not the way to teach children properly. It just isn't. And take that from somebody who spent many years in adult education and writing applications for trainings, okay? There's nothing like a hands-on training, nothing. And I know people learn at in all kinds of different ways, but I'm telling you, there is nothing like a one-on-one or a one-to-many hands-on training with someone in front of you where you can raise your hand and ask questions. And even if you're doing a live online education, you know, a lot of the universities now offer classes like that. Sure, you can learn, but I'm telling you, you don't learn as quickly or as well as in person. And I would go to task arguing that with anybody. I've been there, done that, from both sides of the fence. So early research suggests that interactive media such as electronic books and learn to read applications can be useful in teaching vocabulary and reading comprehension, but only in children preschool age or older. And again, I'm going to argue with that. I mean, maybe the novelty of online books that have little characters that pop out and walk around and talk, but I don't think that they get the full benefit when they're doing it online, especially when they interweave like gaming and fun. It's not giving the same effect to the same areas of the brain and imprinting as hard as it would if you had a solid physical book in your hands for something that you really enjoyed. I'm going to argue that. I don't think that replacing the old ways of learning is what we should be doing. Maybe supplementing slightly, maybe. I have to say when CD-ROMs came out, I remember having the full CD-ROM encyclopedia. I don't even remember who put that out, but one of them did. And thinking to myself, oh my God, why did I hate history so much when I was growing up? Because I did. I hated history. It was so boring. It was just black and white and bleh. Didn't make any difference to me. And then as soon as I got this encyclopedia that you could see pictures and colors and all kinds of things happening, it was very exciting. So multimedia did help me find an interest in something I didn't have an interest in before. But I don't sit online. I mean, I read. I guess, reading on the internet, but you have to be older. We're talking about children. When you're a child, you need that tactile sensation. You need that writing. You know, when they have kids and they have them typing things, like, to learn their vocabulary words. And I'm telling you, when you take a piece of paper and a pen and you're doing, like, vocabulary and you don't know how to spell a word, write it down 5 times. Because when it comes time for the test, you're going to be able to see that in your head. You're going to see exactly what you wrote down. If you never physically, like, touch those letters, at least for me, I know that I have a lot more difficult time trying to retrieve that spelling in my head if I did not physically write it down. Like the physicalness of putting pen to paper is what imprints it in the brain. Says, anyway, back to vocabulary and reading comprehension, the potential educational benefits for children under 2 years old, this question, as research on interactive media in this group is scant. And it is well known that infants and toddlers learn best through hands-on and face-to-face experiences. Exactly what I said, but I'm going to extend it even further than infants. I'm going to say at least until the kid has reached a level of kind of getting the way the world works. You know what I mean? Once the kid understands, I mean, we all did it that way, and I find the internet and being able to look things up electronically to be a great tool. But had I never had a book, had I never had a pen, I don't know about that. I think that it would make me feel very scattered. You're not grounded in things. All right, back to the story. So this commentary notes that while mobile device use by children can provide an educational benefit, the use of these devices to distract children during mundane tasks may be detrimental to the social emotional development of the child. And that is exactly what I was saying. It's a distraction. When they start putting these animations into books so the characters come alive, that is not helping them remember the comprehension of what the story was trying to say. It's like the news. It's like that distraction for you to go, look over there. And it's training you to be distracted. It's turning you into an ADD person. You know, don't let that happen. You want to be able to focus your attention and to comprehend without being distracted. Just like, you know, noise. Like I said, when there's a TV on in every room constantly and people talking and noise, I mean, that's just so distracting beyond the point of being able to put any real deep thought into process. I need to have a neat desk and quiet, and then my brain can go crazy. But until that happens, I am way too distracted to be able to put anything worth thinking about into my brain. Okay. It says the researchers ask, quote, if these devices become predominant, the predominant method to calm and distract young children, which they are, you know, if you watch what parents do when kids are getting antsy or whatever, they stuff a cell phone in their face. Here, go play a game, kid. You know, back in our day, it used to be go play the pinball machine or whatever, but still, don't go sticking the cell phone into your kid's face. Play I Spy would be a good thing if you're on a road trip. I Spy was probably one of my favorite games as a kid when we were going on vacation or something and bored in the car. Anyway, researchers ask, if these devices become the predominant method to calm and distract young children, will they be able to develop their own internal mechanisms of self-regulation? Quote, it has been well studied that increased television time, and it refreshed right in the middle of the story. Hold on. It has been well studied that increased television time decreases a child's development of language and social skills. Mobile media use similarly replaces the amount of time spent engaging in direct human-to-human interactions, says Jenny Radesky, clinical, wow, there's like ads moving this, clinical instructor at the Developmental Behavior Pediatrics of Pediatrics at Boston University School of Medicine, and a former fellow in pediatrics at Boston Medical Center. She said in a statement, the author questions whether heavy device use during young childhood could interfere with the development of, oh, what's empathy? Yes, we are creating psychopaths. Social and problem-solving skills that are typically obtained by exploring unstructured play and interacting with peers. These devices may also replace the hands-on activity important for the development of sensory motor and visual motor skills, which are important for the learning and applications of math and science. And that's what we're seeing. We are not pumping out mathematicians and scientists anymore in this country. That's why I've mentioned this many times before, why every year they look to up the H-1B visa for out-of-country technical people to come here to fill the jobs. And that should be very disturbing. We are dumbing down our children, making them incapable of any type of real deep mathematical or scientific thought, free thought, creativity. And we're boxing them in to learn to be lab rats that react to dopamine. That's exactly what we're doing. And in the meantime, becoming little psychopaths. While much remains unknown, the author recommends that parents try each application before allowing their children to access it. They may also encourage parents to use these applications with these children, as using interactive media together enhances its educational value. At this time, there are more questions than answers when it comes to mobile media. Until more is known about its impact on child development, quality family time is encouraged, either through unplugged family time or a designated family hour. These findings are detailed in the Journal of Pediatrics. I mean, honestly, we really didn't need somebody to tell us that because I think instinctually we've always known that. I know that we have mentioned the story before. There was a story that came out about Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs would never let his children play with iPads. And I can tell you just with my own child that I can definitely see 100% a difference in her personality after she's watched TV, after she's played on the computer. And it's not good. It is antisocial. She tends to get crabby. She doesn't listen. And like they said, they really believe that it causes them to lose a lack of self-control. And I absolutely can see that. So, anyway, I just thought to put the icing on the cake, I would do that story that's been sitting around for a while. One other thing I wanted to touch on, and this is something that we've talked about time and time again, and then I found a story on it, and it's been waiting, waiting, waiting for us to get to it. It was chronic fatigue syndrome. You know, we've talked about GMOs and the poisons in our food, nanotechnology, and all the stuff that's been going on, and how it's really, I am positive that this is what is wreaking havoc on people's immune systems. And we dug into the microbiome and the gut bacteria and how that interacts with your body as well and how it affects your immune system. Leaky gut syndrome, you know, if that gets disrupted, how glyphosate kills your gut bacteria. I was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome back in the early 90s, and that was when all my problems started for the next 25 years. So here's something very interesting. At the time when chronic fatigue was happening, and it started also with the first soldiers that went into the Gulf War, and they were blaming a lot of that on that anthrax vaccine, where they were testing squalene as an adjuvant, was never approved until Obama declared a quote unquote state of emergency with that bird or swine flu, whichever one it was. I think it was the bird flu, to allow all those untested vaccines to be fast tracked into the United States with squalene. They had never acknowledged publicly that chronic fatigue syndrome was a real syndrome. They kind of used that term loosely and then said that they thought most of it was psychological. Well, I can tell you that it was not psychological. I mean, it was like I got run over by a truck, and that was the end of that. That you had no energy, you couldn't do anything, your thinking was cloudy, and then you started to get really sick, and just all these funky, weird problems, and people telling you you're dying of some crazy cancers because they don't know what's wrong with you. Well, anyway, new evidence proves that chronic fatigue really is a biological disorder. Nope. people who have it aren't just run down. Their immune systems are stuck in overdrive. And I'm going to tell you what the end result of that is, because I lived it and I've met so many people now that have lived it. The end result of your immune system being stuck in overdrive for many, many, many years ends up being autoimmune disease. And then in the end, you collapse adrenal fatigue. It burns your body out because it is just keeping you in high gear all the time. After decades of searching, researchers have finally discovered distinct immune changes that occur during chronic fatigue syndrome, proving once and for all that it is more than just quote-unquote exhaustion or a psychological disorder. This is the first robust evidence that the illness, which can leave people bedridden for months at a time, is a biological disorder with distinct stages, and it means we'll also be able to diagnose it earlier than ever before. It'll be interesting to see what they say here. Just last month, the U.S. took a big step forward by classifying chronic fatigue as a disease and renaming it, quote, System Exertion Intolerance Disease, or SEID. Along with the name change, it also was given a strict set of symptoms that doctors could use to diagnose the disease. In other countries such as Australia and the UK, the condition is known medically as myelagic encephalomyelitis. But despite these clinical labels, scientists have struggled to find any signature biological changes associated with the disease that they could test for. So researchers from Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health, decided to investigate. They analyzed the blood plasma of 298 patients with chronic fatigue and compared it to 348 healthy controls. And after adjusting for stress levels and known immune system influences such as age and sex, the team found specific patterns in 51 immune biomarkers that are associated with the disease. The results are published in Science Advances. Quote, we now have evidence confirming what millions of people with this disease already know, is that MECFS, so I guess that must be their acronym, is not psychological, the leader of the study, Maddie Horning, said in a press release. Our results should accelerate the process of establishing the diagnosis after individuals fall ill, as well as discovery of new treatment strategies focusing on these early blood markers. Interestingly, they also found that there were unique patterns in patients who had the conditions for 3 years or less, which provides some insight into what causes the disease. These early patients had increased amounts of immune molecules called cytokines, in particular cytokines called interferon gammas, which spike after many viral infections, including Epstein-Barr. And that's very interesting because there was a big outbreak of Epstein-Barr at the University of Buffalo when I was there at the late 80s, early 90s. And as a matter of fact, there was that disease is actually very rare in the populace. And they had a one building where there were like 12 people diagnosed. And they were like, whoa, something's not quite right here. But it makes you wonder, you know, I mean, where did that come from? And could it have been in a vaccination? Could it have been in our food? So let's see what they came up with. These results support the hypothesis that chronic fatigue is a result of a hit-and-run infection that has interrupted the immune system's ability to balance itself. Essentially, it seems that the immune system gets stuck in high gear. Now, where do we know where they're fucking around with the immune system and putting it into high gear? How about with adjuvants? Yes, I said it, adjuvants. When my cat ended up with cancer back in the 80s and his leg became part of the Cornell study when they amputated it, and his doctor had told me all about using the adjuvants in the 3 years rabies vaccine versus the 1 year rabies vaccine, and that adjuvant was the cause of the sarcoma because it messed with the immune system. That was my first hint. But the second hint was, after all those soldiers went to the first Gulf War and got this quote-unquote chronic fatigue syndrome, and then we find out that they've been testing the anthrax vaccine loaded with squalene on them that had not been approved for human use at the time, at least by the FDA. And in the same time period, I think I mentioned this a few weeks back, this is when I got my one and only ever flu shot. Was at the University of Buffalo, and they were giving them away for free. And I got sick right after that and was sick for the next 20 years with all these fucked up problems. And this is exactly what happened. My immune system went absolutely haywire. That's what adjuvants do. Adjuvants irritate the immune system so they get a marked response. That's what they're doing right now with these new quote-unquote vaccines where they're using this RNAi to be able to go in. I mean, RNAi is interference, so they can flip on and turn off different things in the DNA. But one of the things that they can do with that is then kick certain parts of your immune system into high gear. This is dangerous, slippery slope, just like all the stuff we talk about. It appears that the ME/CFS patients are flush with cytokines until around the 3-year mark, at which point the immune system shows evidence of exhaustion and cytokine levels drop, said Horning in the release. Early diagnosis may provide an opportunity for treatment that likely differ from those that would be appropriate for later phases of the illness. In fact, there are already drugs that are known to dampen cytokine is what it is, C-Y-T-O-K-I-N-E, cytokine behavior on the market, which could potentially be trialed against chronic fatigue in the future. The team is now hoping to push the results of a second study they've been running, which is looking not just at the biological changes that occur alongside chronic fatigue, but also at the agents that cause these changes. Gee, don't you think that's where we should have started? There's obviously something in the environment that is causing these changes in our immune system, which we've had for millions of years. The study delivers what has been eluded for so long, unequivocal evidence of immunological dysfunction in ME/CFS and the diagnostic biomarkers for the disease, said lead researcher on the project, W. Ian Lipkin. The question that we are now trying to address in a parallel microbiome project is what triggers this dysfunction. So there you go, people. Chronic fatigue is not in people's heads. I could have told you that a long time ago, but I guess they have now proved it to their satisfaction. Let's just hope that the cure isn't any worse than the disease. What they should be doing is trying to figure out what it is in our environment that is damaging our biological systems. All right. So let's close that story. So where do we go from here? Hold on. I had a story about John Hopkins. Here's something that happened a long time ago, but I find it pretty interesting that there is so much proof that now there's a $1 billion class action lawsuit. You know, don't think that your government is thinking about you and your best interest when they are using the grand petri dish that is called planet Earth as opposed to a laboratory. Or, hey, maybe they did it in a laboratory first and then just released it on unwitting patients to see what would happen. Oh, no, they'd never do that. Oh, yes, they will. John Hopkins faces a $1 billion class lawsuit over experiments on people in an STD study. Over seven, and I think actually we read about this when we looked at the 10 most horrible human experiments that were done without the people's consent back a few months ago. It says over 750 plaintiffs are suing Johns Hopkins University over its role in medical experiments in Guatemala in the 1940s and 50s. Hundreds were deliberately infected with sexually transmitted diseases as part of a U.S. government program. The lawsuit in Baltimore seeks $1 billion in damages for individuals, spouses, and children of the victims who were infected with diseases, including syphilis and gonorrhea. It seeks at least $75,000 in damages for each of nine counts. Former research subjects and their families claim that John Hopkins officials had, quote, substantial influence, unquote, over the studies, and we're involved in masterminding the experiments. And I'm going to tell you what, we've seen Johns Hopkins is right smack dab in the middle of the Brain Project, and they have that massive database of all the children's brains. And don't think that there isn't lots of DARPA money that's being sprinkled there. They're right in the center of the government hive there. You got your NSA headquarters and all kinds of government offices. Johns Hopkins has been in the know for a long time. Says the plaintiffs also feature the estates and families of 124 people who died from complications of the diseases that they contracted through the hazardous experiments. While an attorney for the university calls the suit baseless, officials from the institution describe the experiments as, quote, deplorable and unconscionable, while arguing that they didn't, quote, initiate, pay for, direct, or conduct the Guatemala studies. For more than half a century since the time of the Guatemala study, scholars, ethicists, and clinicians have worked with government officials to establish rigorous ethical standards for human research. Yeah, we know how that goes. Johns Hopkins welcomed bioethical inquiry into the U.S. government's Guatemala study and its legacy, Kim Hope, the university spokesman, said in an email, according to the Baltimore Sun. This lawsuit, however, is an attempt by the plaintiff's counsel to exploit a historic tragedy for monetary gain, he added. What? Excuse me? To exploit a historic tragedy? I would think that if I were the descendant of some sort of person who was unknowingly and unwittingly made some sort of human, horrible human experiment, that I would expect that they at least would have to compensate in some way, at least as a big F you, don't you? Why should these bastards be allowed to get away with this scot-free like it didn't mean anything? In 2010, U.S. President Obama called the experiments carried out during the administration of Truman clearly unethical. And remember, when we dug into the history of the biowarfare program in the United States, that was during the days of Truman. That's when that all started. And that was no accident. Obama called it, quote, clearly unethical, and he apologized to those subjected, expressing deep regret. In 2011, the victim sued eight U.S. government officials over the study. A federal judge dismissed the case, however, saying that the government could not be held liable for actions committed in another country. It couldn't, even when it was the government that was doing the horrible actions. The initial intent of the study in Guatemala was to look for new ways to prevent STDs, including gonorrhea, chancroid, and syphilis, which all can be fatal if left untreated. The first experiments involved infecting prostitutes with gonorrhea or syphilis and then allowing them to have unprotected sex with soldiers or prison inmates. When a few of these men became infected, the research approach changed to direct inoculations of soldiers, prisoners, and mental patients. About 1,500 study subjects were involved, and although institutional officials were aware of the study, the subjects were not informed of the purpose of the study and did not provide consent. And that's the key. Ding, ding, ding. The ethical violations included use of study subjects who were members of highly vulnerable populations, research without consent, and deception in conducting experiments. And according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and these are the guys that are working on the Brain Project, correspondence between the investigators indicates that they and their superiors recognize the unethical nature of the research studies. And guys, don't think that that isn't going on now. Maybe today it's not syphilis. Today it's nanobots. Today it's, brain cultures. Today it's inserting memory cards into a PTSD patient. And yeah, they're going to say that they had informed consent because they told them what the experiment was. But I'm going to tell you what, there's a much grander plan of an experiment that's going on that they're not telling you about. This study on the syphilis gonorrhea patients was halted in 1948 when rumors about dodgy experiments began spreading. the unethical study was funded by a grant from the U.S. National Institutes of Health. Oh, my God. And that is who is funding all the brain project. It's a grant from the U.S. National Institute of Health to the Pan American Sanitary Bureau, which became the Pan American Health Organization, to several Guatemalan government ministries. Apparently, the study had never been published. According to the report on the Guatemala experiments by the Presidential Commission for the Study of Bioethical Issues, a committee of the National Research Council dedicated to venereal diseases was responsible for giving the go-ahead to the studies. Dr. Joseph Moore from Johns Hopkins University chaired the 1946 study section that approved the Guatemalan research. The experiments in Guatemala starkly revealed that, despite awareness on the part of the government officials and independent medical experts of then existing basic ethical standards to protect against using individuals as a mere means to serve scientific and government ends, those standards were violated, the report stated. The Guatemala experiments have called to mind the notorious Tuskegee syphilis experiment. That's what I was thinking of, conducted between 1932 and 1972 by the U.S. Public Health Service to study the progression of untreated syphilis in black men in rural Alabama who were told that they were receiving free health care from the government as a treatment from bad blood. And, you know, if anything, if we've learned anything, take a look at the VA. Take a look at how much the VA is helping these soldiers after they've exposed them to all of these unknown medical experiments, and then let them come here to tell them that there's nothing wrong with them as they're sitting on a list and dying. Be very afraid that our healthcare system in the United States is being transitioned to some sort of government-run healthcare program. So when you go there and you tell them that you're sick from eating the GMO nanotech foods, they're going to tell you that you have a mental disorder and give you medication as per the new ruling. None of the men infected was informed that they had the disease, and this was the Tuskegee experiment, nor was anyone ever treated for it with penicillin when it became proven as an effective treatment in syphilis. So there you go. I mean, if there was ever anything that provided proof, I hope they sue the pants off of Johns Hopkins University, and I hope they get money from the feds also. All right, we got about 20 minutes left to the show. I know I promised open phones all week. If somebody wants to call in now, this would be a great time if you want to. I've hacked through most of the stories that I had this morning that I wanted to talk about. And we could talk about anything that you fancy. The number here is 718-717-8296. And you could join me if you're out there, Doc. I know you've been trying to call in all week, so now would be the time I have unforwarded the phones. And if not, I will continue. But I have one last story, actually, about the cat toxoplasmas taking over your brain. If nobody wants to call, we can look at that. Okie dokie. I know it takes a second for my voice to get out to chat land. Yes, these ethicists who are devoid of ethics, thank you, Jane, and that is exactly the problem right now. Don't think that there are a lot of ethics that are going on right now, because these people are doing things that could potentially not only end biology as we know it, but, I mean, go back to even the Large Hadron Collider. Where's the ethics in that? Oh, and somebody is calling. Where's the ethics in the Large Hadron Collider without a vote from anyone? That we literally could accidentally destroy the planet. All right, let's answer the phone. Hello, good morning. Who's calling in?
Good morning, this is Michael.
Michael, good morning. How are you?
I have issues about the bank.
Oh, go for it.
Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank.
Ah, where's that?
It's China, and it's China's alternate to the World Bank and the IMF.
Yes.
And I believe that this is something that's probably outshines the nanotech right now, just in the fact that it's more relevant to us, because, I mean, not that nanotech isn't relevant, but but nanotech isn't for us because we're going to be nice and broke by that time that it becomes ready to use. I think nanotech is for the next Chinese overlord to use in suppressing the people. We're going to have to deal with
Chinese overlords are working on nanotech too. So yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be their little
robot army.
Or the robots that deny that they're robots. Of course I'm a real person.
Yeah. So is there anything new? I didn't see anything last night, though. I was distracting myself with a dangling carrot of two episodes of my sci-fi show that my sister got me hooked on.
The latest news that I've seen is that the United States will not be allowed into AIIB.
Wow.
And by charter, they're not going to be allowed into the AIIB. And pretty much every other nation in the world has joined it. So the UK has joined it, Canada has joined it, Australia has joined it, New Zealand's, I guess, in the middle of signing papers right now. The big money has joined it, and it's going to be their big money against our big money.
That's interesting. Yeah, I did not see, actually, I have to go to my other page where I had all that news posted, but I did not see Canada Inc. It's interesting they're allowing Canada, but not us.
Canada is part of the Queensland.
That is
true. And the Queen's already acquiesced to the Chinese bank.
So what do you think is going to happen? So the Chinese bank, we have this Chinese International Monetary Fund. That when is it set to go live? Did you say September?
I believe it goes live September 1st. Mm-hmm. And what I see is, let's say in the future, let's pick a country like Guatemala. And Guatemala needs to put in a sewer system. And they need $3 billion or $3 trillion or whatever it is. And then Guatemala is in the position where they can't pay it back. So the IMF is going to say, well, you can't pay us our debt. So we're going to take all your oil or all your timber or all your tongue nut industry or, you know, whatever it is that your maize, whatever it is that you guys export, we're going to take that. And I think that the China Investment Bank, I don't believe, will do that the same way that we do it right up front. I mean, in the end, they'll end up doing the same thing.
Well, you know, though, in Africa, that's what they've been doing. The Chinese have been working for quite a number of years on the east coast of Africa, where they pretty much, and I don't remember which country it was, but it's right on the east coast. They built them an entire armed services and lent them the money, and then they couldn't pay the loans. And so the Chinese are running it all for them.
Yeah. And but the Chinese also build infrastructure when they go in. They may say that, you know, we're going to take your oil and we're going to build these highways and the hospitals and all that, but it's there for the people to use. And when we go in, we just take it and give it to us. We're going to find bin Laden in your backyard
and set up a puppet government. The Chinese go in, they build infrastructure and buildings, and then they stay.
Well, the most recent example of the puppet government in Africa would be like South Sudan, right?
Right.
South Sudan was just Sudan, and then the United States and Israel goes in and says, hey, we kind of need your oil, and go ahead and split your country up. And that really came into being once the United States says, well, we do have, you know, El Shabaab or whoever it is in Sudan.
And we need to take them out. So
we do, because, I mean, think of the children.
Yes.
Think of the children.
That is true. I see here a story from the 31st in ABC. It's saying that Japan is not planning on joining the China-led Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. And that is no big surprise to me, since Japan is our girlfriend pretty much. They do what
we
tell them.
Yeah, they're our number one consort. Yeah, they are our number one consort.
Yeah, they do what we tell them to do. Though, very interestingly enough, Japan, for the first time in hundreds of years, well, maybe not hundreds of years, maybe a generation, has just totally beefed up their war infrastructure.
Well, yeah, since World War II, because after World War II, they were kind of turned into, well, basically a vassal state. They could defend themselves, but not really defend themselves. We were there, and we were going to set up bases and make sure they were safe.
Right. Actually, I thought I posted this.
But, you know, like when it comes to Japan, their economy's dead. They're like,
Fukushima
they're the walking
killed
dead.
It. Fukushima.
Right, they're the Walking Dead.
Yeah, and Hillary Clinton came out and said when Fukushima happened that we cannot allow people to pass false rumors because Japan's economy is our most important economy.
That's why the Tokyo Olympics is 2020.
Exactly.
Let everybody think everything's good and fine. Give them that, and, you know, who cares? They're all going to be dead in 10 years anyways.
Japan's in big-time trouble. Yeah, businesses are hurting big time. I just saw one of the big Japanese car makers, I believe it was Honda, they have been losing money left and right. And I mean, how are you going to sell anything when it's radioactive? You know, they just found radioactive tea now in Taiwan, I believe. I mean,
South Korea doesn't allow any imports of Japanese food at all, and Russia just banned the imports of Toyotas made in Japan.
Well, there you go, and they should be. They should be. So, interestingly, Japan will not be joining the International Bank of China as we've instructed them.
That's interesting because, you know, like through their literature, they invite the entire world except for the United States and North Korea, which I find then to be that we're interesting bedfellows with North Korea, that we're considered to be like a same threat to the world economy or as dangerous to the world economy as North Korea is.
It says that there's more than 40 countries already who have aligned themselves with the bank.
And those are big countries.
Yeah.
They're not, it's not like we got like Togo and, you know, West.
Togo and Fiji.
Or, you know, Burundi and,
yeah.
You know. This is, I think this is real, real, real big stuff. I think this is like probably the most pressing issue is the bank getting ready to, well, stick it to us. Put it right in our Federal Reserve, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. So how do you think they're going to prevent us from doing commerce internationally? What do you think the end result's going to be?
I think the end result is going to be that oil doesn't get sold in dollars anymore. That's really going to be that oil will not be sold in dollars, that Saudi Arabia will not take oil or take dollars for their oil anymore. I think that's the end goal, is to break the petrodollar supremacy.
How fitting, too. The total number of founding members will be confirmed on April 15th. Ha, what a great date that is.
That would be April 15th. That's the day that every American should send a letter to the IRS saying that their dog ate their hard drive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. I just think I don't want to be like a scaredy cat or calling for, you know, doom and gloom, but this is a pretty real deal. I mean, like, our whole entire life, even though, you know, our economy's in the toilet, everybody here's still doing fairly okay just because the dollar is king.
But it hasn't always been king.
No, but it's been king for all intents and purposes, it has been king for forever because nobody remembers when it wasn't.
That's true.
Well, and when we hit that Weimar-style inflation.
What, the $32 loaves of bread? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, yeah, $32 loaf of bread on Monday, and by Friday it's $68. You know, the doubling and tripling of prices on a daily basis. I mean, you got to look at any country that's had any kind of, you know, recent currency revaluation. Venezuela is a good, a good example of that.
Yeah, Venezuela or Mexico, if you remember.
The Mexican economy is an interesting one to look at, too, because look at their peso crisis in, 77
the 70s,
and then again
yeah.
in 81. They revalued the first time by 100. And then a couple of years later, they revalued by 100 again. Well, that's like 1,000% revaluation.
Yeah, that's a reverse split on your stocks.
Exactly. You know? So, like, your $1,000 in, you know, 4 years is worth a dollar.
Yep. Which basically makes every dollar you have worthless. You can wipe yourself with it. Save it for toilet paper.
And the worst part is that Coke is still going to be $1.59.
Exactly.
These are just things that I think about. The money thing is really driving me crazy right now. The Asian Infrastructure Bank is just, it's the writing on the wall.
Yeah, I'm looking to see if there is any type of list right now. I mean, I've seen a few separate stories that have come out to say, so and so is joining, another one is joining. This story here says that allies such as Taiwan, South Korea, the UK, and Australia all hopped on board. I did not know about Taiwan and South Korea. That's somewhat surprising.
That's very interesting that Taiwan hopped on board, considering, they're not China, but they are China.
Well, yeah, they were the weren't they the UK Chinese? That's Hong Kong, right? No?
That's Hong Kong, yeah. Taiwan was the nationalist Chinese fled there after World War II when the United States decided to back the communists rather than the nationalists.
South
And
Korea,
then they
though,
set
I
up in
thought
it.
that they pretty much were like a US colony.
Yeah, South Korea is like the U.S.'s little brother. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we take good care of them because of North Korea over the border.
Well, they're a handy place to launch planes at China from.
Yeah, exactly. Or missiles.
Or missiles. Or missiles. That could be, they've got deep ports, and you can put a lot of submarines in those deep ports.
Yeah, lots of submarines.
China has the world's largest submarine fleet right now, by the way.
Yeah, and they've been improving them. I saw there was some big purchases recently. One of the things I wanted to ask you is what benefit does it have? I have not seen that North Korea wasn't invited. What benefit would it have for them not to invite North Korea? Wouldn't that piss us off? And I thought North Korea was pretty chummy with Z,
Everything
when
that
Kim
I
Jong.
read about North Korea not being invited is because their economy is not stable enough for them to be invited.
Right, that's true.
I don't think it has anything to do with their politics or anything like that. I think it was purely a matter of their economy not being stable enough. And because, I mean, just as South Korea is our little brother, North Korea is China's little brother.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
China's little brother that makes meth and.
And slave labor.
Right.
Yeah, speaking of the petrodollar, did you see that the Getty Air was found dead?
It was sort of disturbing. He was found like with a nose full of cocaine and then like traumatic rectal injuries or something like that.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, he was
Oh,
found and he was bleeding profusely from the nether regions
God.
and traumatic and from a traumatic event.
Maybe it was like butt chugging. Cocaine.
Maybe it was like a Gaddafi thing.
I don't know.
Because
Yeah, I
Gaddafi died of
remember.
painful rectal injury as well. Well, I
Yeah.
mean, he died of the bullet hole in his head, but the painful rectal injury was right before that.
Yeah, that's disturbing. I don't know. Do you think they was sending a message?
It could be. Maybe, how much money do they control and how much political influence do they have?
Right. I don't know. I don't know that answer. Don't know that answer.
I know they've got a lot of money still locked up in the oil and gas production within Los Angeles itself.
Which, of course, right now, probably is going to have some major issues if they're not going to allow them to use water, especially for the fracking.
The California water thing is pretty interesting. Yesterday, I actually heard an AM radio station talking about it, and they put the fault of the drought directly on the backs of the marijuana farmers in California.
Really?
Yeah, that marijuana farming has caused the drought.
Oh.
Not the golf courses.
Yeah, not the golf courses, not the frackers contaminating all the aquifers. No.
Not the people selling water to bottled water companies
Nestle,
or
right.
anything like that. It was the marijuana farmers.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
It's the
Yeah.
gateway drug to communism and thirst.
Yep. Yeah, I can't wait to see how this is going to play out then. Hey,
Well, won't it be interesting that Operation Jade Helm, which, it's just like any other operation so far, and these ambiguous kind of like androgynous, somewhat girly names like Jade Helm or the one that was before that, Robin Sage, they have these things, but this is kind of like the first time I've ever seen them ex leave a. Or give the press release and then like 3 days later expand the drill. Because now it's no longer just like, you know, up to Texas. Now it's all the way out to Florida.
Have
so
you
it's basically all the southern United States that's involved in this.
Yeah, that's what it's sure. Well, southern and some of the southwest as well.
Right, right. So, you know, you put the China Investment Bank coming online September 1st, California not having any drought, and then whatever other kind of economic crashes we have. And then the people are already kind of, well, what's the saying about you put the frog in the pot and you slowly increase the heat? Well, these people are going to already be, you know, all those soldiers have been there for 2 weeks. It's fine. You know, there's no problem.
Right. Have you seen any evidence in your neck of the woods?
I can't say that I've seen any kind of direct evidence related to it, but, you know, I live in a tiny town. I'm not too far from one of the published sites of this exercise. And in my little tiny town, we have four cops. I mean, we're tiny that we don't even have a stoplight in my town. But we've got four cops, and our cops are walking around like they're like a tactical Ted. I mean, it's kind of disturbing to see the one baby Huey cop that we have that works night. And he's got, you know, multiple trauma plates on his Kevlar vest and six loaded magazines for his AR, M4, or whatever he's got in the car. And he's getting a Slurpee at 11:30 at night in a town with 1,500 people. That's disturbing.
Yeah. So when is this Jade going on for the whole summer, I think, right?
It goes from June 15th to September 15th are its scheduled dates. And, I mean, it's a real thing. The press release is out there. There are contact numbers that you can verify it. One of the interesting things is they've released some information about economic impact. And they said that the economic impact to the areas would be $150,000. Well, that's nothing. For two months, $150,000 for a military exercise is really nothing, because if you were to break that down, that comes out to be like $2,500 a day. And what kind of military operation can you run on $2,500 a day?
Yeah, not much.
And I mean, like, even if you're just going to feed them, you know, if you've got 2,500 people and you've got to feed them at $2,500 a day, everybody gets what, two gas station burritos, or you get a burrito and a corn dog?
If
and,
that.
You know, have a glass of water.
Yeah.
Drink out of the hose, sir.
Michael, I hate to do this, but guess what? We're down to the last 10 seconds of the show.
Thank you for having me.
Fist.
Love it.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. All right, guys, everyone have an awesome Friday. Make sure you stick around tonight. Make sure you come visit this weekend. There's all kinds of new shows up. Enjoy the spring. Thanks for calling, Michael. Thanks for listening, everybody. Take care.